October 7. Okay, we're on 8. Is it 8? 8. Today's the 8. Chapter 9, slide 14. We're looking at transmembrane proteins. You probably have seen this graph even in high school, where you got the membrane fluidity, you get the membrane with these embedded and peripheral proteins, and that model is called the fluid mosaic model. Okay, so then you've got the lipid-linked proteins are closely associated with the membrane. You've got these prenylated, which is a type of long-chain hydrocarbon. Myristylation, of course, myristic acid. Do you remember what fatty acid that is? How many carbons is it? Myristic. No, it's not the top. Top is laurel. 14, there you go. So that's what it's... Palmitylation, that means it's... palmitic acid is how many hydrocarbons? How many carbons? That's 16, yeah. All right, so these long-chain hydrocarbons sit in there and really help link that protein to that region. And so this is called the fluid mosaic model. It was developed in the 50s? I think it was developed in the 70s. It's amazing how much stuff discovered in the 70s, 60s and 70s. Behave like water-soluble proteins. These peripheral associated proteins are just mildly attracted to the membrane. You can be washed off with salt, and they're typically water-soluble. This is called the fluid mosaic model. How do we know it's the fluid mosaic model? That's the question. That's what these two figures answer. How do we know the fluid mosaic model works? This is now slide number 15. Two techniques, two experimental methods. First was called cell fusion. The other is called FRAP. Which, yes?
Can you just go back to the other slide?
Yeah. Let's see, right there. Yeah, what do you need? Mild and water soluble. All right. Got it?
Yeah,
all righty. Fluorescent. You know, I have now forgotten what FRAP means. Can you believe that? Fluorescent recovery? Fluorescent? Fluorescent recovery after photo bleaching. All right, anyway, so cell fusion. This is where you have a mouse cell and a human cell. They have different proteins, and therefore they can be marked with antibodies that have green markers and red markers that glow under ultraviolet, glow green and red under ultraviolet. There is an enzyme called the Sende virus that part of its behavior is to fuse membranes together. So they take this human cell and this mouse cell, they expose them both, they grow them separately, then they mix them together. They normally wouldn't fuse, but the Sende virus causes them to fuse, form a hybrid cell within a few minutes, and there's a distinct green layer or green region and red region. Immediately after fusion, mouse and human proteins are segregated. In about 40 minutes, notice the time frame, only about less than an hour, at 37 degrees, the markers are fully intermixed. So like buoys in a bay that have lost their anchor, they'll float and mix on the surface in a wide variety, just thoroughly mixing over a large area. So that helps us understand that the membrane is in fact a fluid type structure, in which at least in these cells, there's no underlying structure holding these particular proteins in place. That's not always the case. Additional work discovered that there is an extensive set of proteins just under the surface of the plasma membrane that helps organize the plasma membrane, gives it some structure, and also helps hold some proteins in position. Another way that they looked at this is that they put these fluorescent markers on a cell and then hit it with an intense laser beam. The laser beam was so intense and the energy so strong for that tiny area that it bleached the chromophore. In other words, the chromophore was destroyed and it no longer had any fluorescent ability. So they took a picture of that. They saw they had a distinct dot where the laser had hit. Then a few minutes later, there was infiltration by the surrounding proteins into that area so that that dot became more and more occupied with chromophores that were active. And so you could see this, the fluorescence intensity at that dot. There was that bleaching laser beam that knocked it down, and then over time there was a recovery back to fluorescence in that area because of the mobility of the proteins that were marked with the chromophore. So cell fusion and frap. Very simple. What do these two experiments supposed to demonstrate? What was it again? I heard it. Fluid mosaic model. That's right. So you need to be able to explain these two models. All right. Now, one of the most heavily studied cell membrane structures occurs in the red blood cell. One of the reasons for that is that you can get tons and tons, gallons and gallons of red blood cells from the slaughterhouses. And they're happy to give it to you. Okay, so red blood cells are very easy to study because they're free. And so it's one of those things that, you know, people began using them because it was free, but there's still lots of interesting questions you can ask about it. Turns out when you look at the red blood cell, one of the interesting things about this red blood cell, of course, is that it's not spherical. Spherical structures hold the maximum volume for the unit area of the surface. Spheres hold maximum volume for the surface area of the material covering it. So if you wanted to have a bottle that contained maximum amount of volume for minimum amount of material, the bottle would be round. Seriously. But of course, round bottles don't stand well, they don't pack well, why do Fiji water bottles, why are they square? Marketing is one thing, of course. What's the other reason?
Shipping.
In other words, that they can pack more water in a volume with a square bottle than they can with a round bottle, even though there's more plastic in that square bottle for the volume that it holds. Since you're willing to pay more for Fiji water, they can still make money off having the extra expense of the plastic in the bottle. Never mind. But red blood cells, their particular structure is unique in the fact that they have to travel. They're one of the few cells in your body that travel extensively. Oh, there's plenty of cells that do, macrophages and so on. But this is, it's an interesting cell also because of the way it has to crowd into microscopic capillary beds, in which the capillary is actually smaller than the red blood cell, and it actually has to bend and fold to get through it. You also want a maximum area of the surface for the volume. Why do you want maximum area of surface for the volume instead of minimum? What is it about red blood cells that they're trying to exchange? What? Exchange the gases in which they behave in, which they relate. So that dimple right there doesn't occur naturally because the physics of it would indicate if you're going to have a membrane that's unstructured, it's going to be round. Well, here it is dimpled. So that means there must be some structure underneath it holding it that way, and they've discovered that there's an extensive number of proteins there. What they do is to study these proteins, they have specific techniques that they've learned over the years that create red blood cell ghosts. Ever hear that term? Probably in systems phys, right? In what? Oh, you didn't take it? Where did you hear it? You've never heard of it? Okay. Red blood cell ghosts. So if they can create these red blood cells, they can rupture them very gently. The contents pour out, and they can reseal then the red blood cell. It's amazing. And with the contents not in there, guess what color it is? White, or nearly white. Because the red blood cell, the red of the red blood cell comes from where? The hemoglobin, that's correct. Or the heme, or the iron, exactly right. Without that in there, it turns... Anyway, so you got the ghosts, so it's empty this. They studied these ghosts, and when they emptied all the contents out, and they isolated the ghosts, and they began to look at the proteins closely associated with the ghosts, they end up discovering that they have a repeating set of bands in the electrophoretic tests that they did. The membrane... interestingly enough, with or without ghosts, the membrane rolls along the cell while maintaining its shape, like treads on a tank. It rolls, but it maintains its shape. In other words, if I put a tag right here, I could follow that tag, go into the dimple and around, and then up and inside the dimple around and come around. In other words, that there's some structure in there that the membrane is allowed to move, or that tag is allowed to move, but it still holds that dimple shape. If they look at the red blood cell, particles that have the same size and concentration of red blood cell, solid particles have the flow characteristics of sand. So if it wasn't for the fact that there's some fluidity on the surface of a red blood cell and that particular shape, you try to pump sand through your capillaries. That would be a little awkward. Whoa, I want to go back. Got to go back to union again. Da, 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 da. Okay, now, let's take a look. There are proteins called actin, tropomyosin. Oh, actin and tropomyosin. Where have we heard those terms before? Now, if you're a chemist taking this class, you probably have not heard it before unless you remember it from Foundations of Biology. But actin and tropomyosin are a part of the muscle tissue. That's correct. I didn't go through muscle tissue, but that's okay. There's some other unique proteins called band 1.4, and literally that means they did electrophoresis, and they saw a band, a dark splotch, and they named it band 4.1. Then you have the band 4.2 that's also unnamed. You have a protein called ankyrin, glycophorin A, and spectrin, both an alpha and beta spectrin. And what happens is this the tropomyosin, actin, and spectrin form both an anchor and a network. An anchor and a network here, where you can see where these things, the actin, tropomyosin, and band 4, penetrate into the red blood cell a little bit, and that are connected to the other kinds of groups, clusters with these spectrins, which then creates this network of structure inside the red blood cell that allows it to form that peculiar donut, or that donut shape. So I need for you to recognize that actin, tropomyosin, band 4.1, band 4.2, ankyrin, and spectrin are all proteins associated with the red blood cell structure, inner structure inside the membrane. It's a very common question that you're going to find on certain tests. All right, anyway. And here's this ion channel. That ion channel. What is it transporting?
Chloride.
What is it?
Chloride
and bicarbonate. It is an antiport. We'll talk about that, I think, at this antiport. As one goes in, the other goes out. In a linked thing, it's not all of one or all the other. If a chloride goes out, a bicarbonate must come back, come in. Yes? Right. My understanding is that the network stays in place and the membrane moves around it.
So it's not anchored to the membrane itself?
Well, in other words, that there is there are forces here that help adhere the membrane bilayer to these anchor points, but the bilayer is still fluid. And so things embedded in this can move past these anchor points, but still be held by forces associated with that anchor point. Do I have a good analogy to that? Well, I don't really have a good analogy for it. Let me think about how I can explain that to you. Maybe I'll try that. But it just means that, yes, there are proteins that are, you know, like I said, a tag on that surface is in this membranous part, I mean in the lipid bilayer part, but it's not attached to this spectrin or this cluster here. It's not actually attached to it. So it can be embedded here, and then, but it, since it's embedded, it'll float through these things, move through these things, and the membrane, because of the, you know, lipid bilayer, it holds it in position, and then by hydrophobic association, as it were, it keeps the region in that same shape. I'm not sure I'm explaining that very well. Let me think about it, and we'll talk about it some more. Remind me. Anyway, we'll go on. Let's see here. Membrane components are asymmetrical. Very simple. That means that the components of the membrane are not the same on each side. So you can see here, you have total phospholipids, 50% and 50%. Well, that makes sense. But here you get sphingomyelin. This is for red blood cell, actually. There's some sphingomyelin. The outer leaflet contains a higher percentage of sphingomyelin than does the the interior. Phosphatidylcholine. The interior has less than the outer leaflet. Phosphatidylethanolamine, there's more inner leaflet than outer leaflet. And phosphatidylserine, it's only on the inner leaflet. How does it get that symmetrical? Well, there's this idea. Lipid bilayers are not symmetrical in composition, synthesized in the ER in eukaryotes, plasma membrane in the bacteria, synthesized on one side only. So everything gets dumped on one side. But there are enzymes. Flipases, also called phospholipase translocases, which switch these compounds into different leaflets. Flipases. All right, so, anyway, I for years claimed, quite convinced, that there were no flipases, and this was like in the late 80s, early 90s. And I taught it that there were no flipases, and because there weren't, they hadn't discovered any flipases. So these flipases are relatively new since I've been born. There are a lot of stuff that happened since I've been born. But at any rate, the flipases then are these materials, enzymes that will, if things are synthesized on one side, and actually I don't remember which side it's synthesized on. There are enzymes that will flip it through the lipid bilayer to make this unsymmetrical situation going on there. So it's called flipases, phosphotranslocases, which switch leaflets. Lipid rafts are a relatively new phrase as well. These are known as microdomains of membrane. And so, in other words, that you can end up having a cluster of membrane that has peculiar lipid characteristics, peculiar protein characteristics, and apparently stays intact over a few minutes at a time. And so they just, because it's floating on the surface of the cell, they call it a lipid raft. And so there's a wide variety of things they're discovering about these lipid rafts and how they behave and how they interrelate with the exterior and the interior of the cell. Now, for reasons I can't explain, this is where the book decides to put in. Yes?
I was wondering, is the one side only in bacteria or is that in both?
Some both. Okay. Yeah. Bacteria also are asymmetrical. Yeah. So they put this secretory pathway in here. In other words, how are proteins that are destined to be secreted, how are they synthesized in the cell, transported to the surface, and then released? This is talking about how they are synthesized. And so you are going to have to know this particular pathway. Let's see here. And a few things here. The SRP is a signal recognition protein. And all right, now I'm going to stop right there. We're going to run through this here. One of the questions I like to ask, but I'm not going to guarantee it like I did the Edmund degradation, is to create a caption for this particular diagram. Create a caption for this particular diagram. I eliminate all the words here, but I leave all the numbers, and you have to fill in the diagram. That's a likely question, but not guaranteed. So how do you get a protein that's destined to be excreted from the surface? Well, what happens is, of course, that what happens when you fuse something with the surface? You got this vesicle right here, and you want the content that's in the vesicle to be secreted. How do you do it? Well, it fuses eventually with the surface. And what was the interior then becomes the exterior. So the interior of a vesicle is eventually the exterior. The interior of a vesicle was at one time the interior of the Golgi apparatus, which was at another time an interior of the lumen of the ER, or rough ER. So the ER here, this interior, will eventually be exposed to the exterior of the cell. That's why these proteins are synthesized toward the interior lumen of that ER, because eventually they're going to be exposed to the exterior. So, rough endoplasmic reticulum, which means, why is it rough? Let's repeat, what's the cell biology of it? It's got ribosomes on it, that's right. You've got a protein called SRP. What's the SRP? Signal recognition protein. That's this one. There's a messenger RNA. Here's the ribosome. The ribosome's floating free in the cytosol, but closely associated with the ER. The messenger RNA begins to produce a protein. The protein has a signal on the end of it. The signal attracts the signal recognition protein, and it adheres to it. And thus, as it adheres to it, when it's still with the GTP attached to it, it then guides this whole newly synthesized protein toward this translocon and this SRP receptor. They bind. The signal then begins to run through the translocon. So SRP docks it to the receptor, finds the ribosome translocon complex. The protein then is extruded. Where am I learning? Extruded through the translocon. It begins to fold. Also notice what else is being added to it. Carbohydrate. And so then it continues to make this. It folds appropriately. And you get carbohydrate on the surface of it. Eventually, at the end of the messenger RNA, the ribosome dissociates, and you now have the protein embedded. See, this is the magic part of it here. See, it's going through the translocon. But eventually, the translocon and the protein separate. How does that happen? Woo-hoo. Who knows? Something for you guys to figure out. Okay? By the way, if you guys go to medical school and then go to get your PhD, you can come back here and take my place. We're going to need somebody to take my place in a few. Oh, you're here.
Really?
Oh, I completely forgot. This is Anne Marie Joan. What? Sad. I'm sad. I know I'm sad. Anyway, okay, we're done. We're done. I apologize for not letting you know, but I forgot.
The splendor of a king, clothed in majesty, that All the earth rejoice. All the earth rejoice. He wraps himself in light, and darkness tries to hide. It trembles at his voice, trembles at his voice. How great.